This is a little bit too much.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the seventh canto, chapter 10, chapters entitled Prahlad, the Best Among Exalted Devotees. Today we're covering text 8 and 9. So we'll go through 8, take any questions, and then go on to 9. This ends at 9:30 or 8, 9:15? 9:15. Indriyani. Indriyani mana prana.
Indriyani mana prana.
Atma dharmo dhritir mati.
Atma dharmo dhritir mati.
Rishrishteja smriti satyam.
Rishrishteja smriti satyam.
Yasya nashanti janmana. Translation. O my Lord, because of lusty desires from the very beginning of one's birth, the function of one's senses, mind, life, body, religion, patience, intelligence, shyness, opulence, strength, memory, and truthfulness are vanquished. Purport. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, Kamam Rid Rogam. Materialistic life means that one is afflicted by a formidable disease called lusty desire. Liberation means freedom from lusty desires because it is only due to such desires that one must accept repeated birth and death. As long as one's lusty desires are unfulfilled, one must take birth after birth to fulfill them. Because of material desires, therefore, one performs various types of activities and receives various types of bodies with which to try to fulfill desires that are never satisfied. The only remedy is to take to devotional service, which begins when one is free from all material desires. Anyabhilashita sunyam. Anyabhilashita means material desire, and sunyam means free from. The spirit soul has spiritual activities and spiritual desires, as described by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Mama jamani jamanishvare bhavatad bhakti rahituki toyi. Unalloyed devotion to the service of the Lord is the only spiritual desire. To fulfill this desire, however, one must be free from all material desires. Desirelessness means freedom from material desires. This is described by Srila Rupa Goswami as anyabhilashita sunyam. As soon as one has material desires, one loses his spiritual identity. Then all the paraphernalia of one's life, including one's senses, body, religion, patience, and intelligence, are deviated from one's original Krishna consciousness. As soon as one has material desires, one cannot properly use his senses, intelligence, mind, and so on for the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Mayavadi philosophers want to become impersonal, senseless, and mindless, but that is not possible. The living entity must be living always, existing with desires, ambitions, and so on. These should be purified, however, so that one can desire spiritually and be spiritually ambitious without material contamination. in every living entities, in every living entity, these propensities exist because he is a living entity. When materially contaminated, however, one is put into the hands of material misery. Janma mrityu jara vyadi. If one wants to stop repeated birth and death, one must take to the devotional service of the Lord. Sarvopadi vinirmuktam tat paratoina nirmalam. Rishikena rishikesha sevanam bhakti ruchate. Bhakti, or devotional service, means engaging all our senses in the service of the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Master of all senses. When the spirit soul renders service unto the Supreme, there are two side effects. One is freed from all material designations, and simply by being employed in the service of the Lord, one's senses are purified. So from this verse and purport, it's very clear that material desires are unwanted. In the pastime, in the fourth canto, Prithu Maharaj is meeting with the four Kumaras. Prabhupada in a purport describes how the bhaktas, based upon their transcendental service to the Supreme Lord, are so overwhelmed with transcendental bliss that automatically material desires are vanquished. And so but then again, most of us find that we're not always overwhelmed with transcendental bliss, and these material desires seem to be surfacing. So how to actually go about removing these material desires? In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, in the first characteristic of pure devotional service, Kleshagni, there's a description of the three causes of suffering, and the root cause being ignorance. And then from ignorance comes material desire, bijam. And then from the material desire comes sin. From sin comes suffering. So Prabhupada would often paraphrase or kind of summarize the whole process of suffering, from avidya to the actual prabdha karma. This is suffering comes from ignorance. So eliminate ignorance, you eliminate suffering. So the process of devotional service actually eliminates the ignorance, eliminates the material desire, and eliminates the sin. And so then the suffering is dealt with on all levels. In the Nectar Devotion, I think it was on 15, page 15, Prabhupada describes, and again he's paraphrasing Rupa Goswami, that just as in a forest there are many snakes, many serpents, and when there is a forest fire, the fire burns all the foliage and also burns the snakes. So similarly, the hot fire of Krishna consciousness destroys the snakes of ignorance. So Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janaya Yashu Vairagyam Gyanam Chaya Rahitakam. So when one engages in pure devotional service, immediately one acquires causeless knowledge and detachment. So that comes. And then the material desires, so this ignorance, this avidya, it basically is, Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes it in three ways. This is the ignorance in this analogy of the Son of the Holy Name, and it's covered by the mist of ignorance and the clouds of Anartas. So the mist of ignorance, he breaks down into not understanding the nature of the Holy Name. Nama Chintamani Krishna Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha Purna Shuro Nitya Mukto Binaton Nama Namino. Krishna and Krishna's name are not different. Krishna's name is eternally liberated. Krishna's name has the same power as Krishna. And it's the Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha. It's the reservoir of all mellows, of all pleasure. Just like the first verse in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is Akila describes the objective. So what is the objective? Akila Rasamrita Murti. Vrindavan Krishna, who is the reservoir of all rasas. So on any rasa, a devotee in any rasa can get reciprocation from the Lord. But he's the only incarnation that that's true of. The other is Dasya Ras. Maybe, what is it, Sakya Ras in reverence. It doesn't have the same intimacy. So Krishna can reciprocate with a devotee on any level. And so and within the holy name, that capacity is also there. As we see in the description in the Nectar of Instruction, as one becomes purified, they gradually, you know, one realizes Krishna's name, his form, his pastimes, and also rasa. That's the highest level of realization that comes. So then also, we fail to understand. This is another element of the mist of ignorance. We fail to understand Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore we engage in material piety. In India, so many people take up worshiping other devatas. And then to fail to understand is another element, to fail to understand one's relationship with Krishna and one's relationship with the material energy and the material energy's relationship with Krishna. So basic sambandha gyan, it's just not there. And so there's this ignorance. So as described here, you know, then one, you know, he has this amnesia of his spiritual identity. It's covered over. So when one is in gross illusion, he's over here thinking that he's the center of the universe, and every element in the universe, every aspect of the universe is meant for his pleasure, his enjoyment. And he tries to control it. So this is an extremely conditioned living entity. And the other end of the spectrum, and the process of devotional service brings us to this point of putting Krishna in the center of all the universes, understanding that. And every activity, every thought, every mood is to please Krishna. One's whole life is dedicated in this way. So anyabhilashita sunyam. Sunyam means zero, void. And anyabhilas is desires. Anyabhilashita is this deep nature that one is fully dedicated to pleasing Krishna. So we're somewhere in this transition from seeing ourselves as the center of the universe to seeing Krishna as the center of the universe. And to the degree that we're over here, situated in our constitutional position, Jivara Sarupa Hoy, Krishnara Nitya Das, realizing that, acting on that platform, emoting on that platform, to that extent we experience the transcendental bliss that is intrinsic to the soul. To the extent we're functioning over here, in this egocentric consciousness, trying to satisfy our senses. We're deprived of that happiness. Prabhupada would often quote this Vedic aphorism, Sarve Sukhino Bhavantu, let everyone be happy. He said this is the Vedic mission. And so this happiness that one experiences in Krishna consciousness, actually Rupa Goswami breaks it down into three levels, three plateaus of happiness. On the sadhana platform, it's one of the elements of Shubhada. The pure devotional service creates all auspiciousness. So one of the ways that it creates auspiciousness is provides a superior happiness. And why is it superior? There's two, Rupa Goswami points, makes two points. One is that it's eternal. It's not flickering, it continues. Now we're in the book distribution marathon. Here's a quote from Prabhupada that I got from Giriraj Swami, that by distributing my books, keeps them happy. Reading my books keeps them. So this glorifying, hearing and chanting, you know, keeps the intelligence focused and actually eliminates the desire itself. But the happiness of devotional service and book distribution is one of the greatest happinesses. At least that was my experience always. Even as I'm talking about it right now, I feel the bliss of distributing books. Just talking about it, what the speaker doing it. That was my first service as a devotee. I did that for 16 years. Very sweet. Then another element of the superiority of the happiness in pure devotional service is that it includes all other happinesses. There's the example that's given is just as a queen has servants and assistants and maidservants, and they follow the queen around, taking care of all of her needs. This is from the Narada Pancharatra. So the joys of dharma, artha, kama, moksha, they automatically follow bhakti. So they're there for the devotees. Bilva Mangala Thakur, he describes bhakti and mukti as at the doorstep of a devotee, waiting to serve him with folded hands. So the devotees, they don't care so much about this. And then on the bhava platform, it's moksha lagutakrit, that the conception or the devotional service derides even the conception of liberation, which is considered to be a very high level of happiness. And then on the platform of prema, sandrananda visheshatma, that if one were to multiply the bliss, the happiness of Brahmananda, of impersonal liberation, a trillionfold, that would not equal to atomic particle or atomic fraction of the ocean of bliss of pure devotional service. And so Rupa Goswami describes there that when one is on the platform of prema, he can't even perceive the existence of sense gratification or liberation. Can't even perceive it. What to speak of, even think about, partaking of it. Can't even perceive its existence. So this is the happiness that's available in Krishna consciousness, but we just have to somehow or other be able to access it. This seems to be, it's not that we engage in self-abnegation. We know that that doesn't isn't stable, doesn't have the eternal feature of the superior aspect of happiness in Krishna consciousness. Vishwamitra Muni, he was very advanced in his yogic practices, but with a tinkling of Menaka's ankle bells, he lost it. He lost his focus. And that's contrasted with the power of Haridas Thakur's bhakti. And Maya Devi, first a prostitute, then Maya Devi herself tried to break his Yavyashyatmika Buddhi, his focus, and his tried to get him to, but his senses were so blissfully engaged in Krishna's service that there was no question of that. So then getting back to that question, what do we do if we don't experience this Brahma Sokyam Punantam? If we don't get this higher taste? So this is addressed by Rupa Goswami in the Upadeshamrita in the 8th text, this verse that describes the draws the parallel to jhanas, the avidya, the jhanas of avidya. Right? So when we have jhanas, once when I was in Vrindavan about 20 years ago, I got a little brush of jhanas. You felt so weak, and then you try to taste sugar, and it wasn't sweet. Amazing. So they went to the Shamashaki ashram and got the tantric cure that all the devotees get there. And so very quickly, and that part of the remedy was taking this rock candy. And it really worked. Very soon, after 4 or 5 days, it started tasting sweet again. So that's the formula. Adarad, the word Adarad is used by Rupa Goswami, which means we chant with great care and attention. So this attentive chanting is really the key. Because first of all, pramada, or inattention, which is also sometimes translated as madness. In the 9th canto, pramada is in a word-for-word translation, Prabhupada describes it as a woman, one who steals away the mind of man. So it's kind of a craziness that we go into when we're inattentive. We're not seeing that. Well, let's say if Radhana Swami were to walk through this door, we wouldn't just be nodding our head or looking all over. We would immediately offer dandavats. Right? This is what you do when a great personality enters the room, enters your life. Similarly, every day we're inviting the Supreme Lord to dance on our tongue. And then we just ignore him? And this is the madness of inattention. And that's the root cause of all the other nama-aparads. And so that creates this cloud, that just like in the monsoon season, we don't feel the strength of the sun. It's just not perceivable. But then in the heat of the summer, whew, it's coming full blast. There aren't clouds. There's no mist. It's just coming full on. So this Adarad, by carefully and attentively chanting, the mist and the clouds, mist of ignorance, we start to realize Krishna is none different than his name. Krishna is the Supreme Person. He's performed so many miracles in my life to bring me to Prabhupada's lotus feet, to the lotus feet of Shri Radha Gopina. Just a powerful thing, what he's done. Once Prabhupada was interviewed by a news reporter, and this news reporter was asking Prabhupada to demonstrate some mystic power. Show us some magic, Swamiji. And so Prabhupada pointed to his Western disciples. Said, this is my magic. So it's really, the story I had of how I became a devotee, it boggles my mind just when I think about it. It just gives so much faith in the Shakti that Prabhupada has, and that ISKCON has. So you just think about the transformation you've gone through in your life, and you can just see that Krishna's he's arranged all this through the mercy of his devotees. So adorat, if we can simply do that one thing, just hear. But in order to hear, it's just like Prabhupada in the famous Hare Krishna mantra address. He said this, that this is like a crying of a baby for his mother. Please, Krishna, engage me in your service. So that crying, I remember when my sons were little babies and they'd fall down and they'd land on their knees, and immediately this intense, mommy, you know, and they'd be crying and running for their mother. He said, look at this owie, you know, and then my wife would have to pick them up and soothe them. So that same intensity needs to be there when we chant, that kind of crying from the core of one's heart. But then what are we crying for? We're crying to be engaged in service. And then when the service comes, if we don't take it seriously, how sincere is that crying? And so what I found, particularly on a book distribution marathon, and if we really put out, those are some of the best rounds I've ever chanted, was on a book distribution marathon. I worked really hard. In those days, my gosh, the level of austerity that we performed back in the late 70s and early 80s, it wasn't unusual to do 16, 18 hours a day, you know, on a book distribution marathon. And then you come back the next day, you're just tired, but my God, it was just like the Holy Name picked you up. There was so much ecstasy. And then it would propel you into even more service. I remember once when I just taken first initiation, and we had there were about 20 devotees that were linking up at night. This is traveling Sankirtan with in America it's called a motorhome. I think the BI has one. You know, it's like a self-contained. You have a kitchen, bathroom. In America now they have these motorhomes that cost $2 million. They have a jacuzzi in it, three bedrooms, and, you know, big widescreen television, and, you know, just their conception of heaven on earth. So we would link up. This was a saffron-colored motorhome, saffron paint on the outside, saffron interior, and we had four saffron-colored vans, and we'd come in at night, and we'd have our morning program in the motorhome, and deities installed, and this was in 78, and Ramapad Swami at that time was a brahmachari. He was a temple president in New York, and he came out to participate in the morning program with us. And so he was sitting through the japa period, and then he gave a class. I don't remember which verse, but it was from the second chapter of the first canto, the whole process of devotional service. Somehow really focused on the importance of proper chanting of japa. And he gave examples of, he called it dive bomber japa. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And then radar japa, where devotee's eyes are all over the room, obviously not paying attention, becoming absorbed in this thing and that thing. He said, this is what I've observed all morning. And then he just really stressed, you know, how our whole spiritual advancement depends on the quality of our japa. Prabhupada, I believe it's the 22nd chapter of Madhya Lila, in a purport, this is an itemization of the 64 items of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. And he, in chanting the holy name, Prabhupada in the purport says, of all of the items of sadhana bhakti, Vaidhi sadhana bhakti, the chanting of 16 rounds is the most essential. So that's the most essential. So at any rate, you know, Prabhupada Swami really stressed this point. And so somehow or other it got through my thick head that this was really important. So the next morning when I got up, I was just determined. It was just such a potent class. So I just dug my mental heels in and just wouldn't give my mind an inch to take me off from hearing a mantra. And book distribution in America is quite a bit different than it is here. It's a predominantly atheistic country with at least the facade of religiosity and Christianity. So it took a lot to get people to take books there. But when I went out that day, something very remarkable happened. I did about every single person that I met was sweet. Practically speaking, without fail, I didn't meet any demons. And everybody took a book. And everyone, practically before I even asked for the donation, they were reaching for their wallet. And at the end of the day, I'd done maybe 50% more books, 50% more Lakshmi than I had normally been doing. So, wow. And somehow I connected that with the japa. And so the next day, again, I thought, phew, this is like I discovered a technique for book distribution that was phenomenal, that beat anything else. You know, sometimes this is a big temple. This is a 55th Street temple in New York, and sometimes the Sankirtan leader, we had about over 100 devotees in the Sankirtan department. And it was like Chopati. It was a sea of saffron. You know, I think it was like there were only 3 grahasthas out of 250 devotees, you know, in the entire temple. This is when Prabhupada was on the planet. And what was I going to say? Oh, yeah, sometimes there would be demonstrations. You know, we had a big auditorium with a stage. We had these amazing dramas, but sometimes the Sankirtan department would go in there and devotees would demonstrate different techniques that they discovered on book distribution. But from my estimation, this was by far the most powerful technique. It went right to the core of my whole existence. I was just so happy when I go out in Sankirtan, and that happiness was contagious. People would see. They'd start smiling as soon as they saw me because I was smiling, and I was like lit up like a 1,000-watt bulb. And so then I did the same thing the next day. And the same thing happened. You know, much more than I'd ever experienced before. So that's the power of the process that we have in Kali Yuga. And so I was basically asking Krishna when I was chanting, this is something that was very much a part of my early training, that I'm asking Krishna to engage me in service. And then a big part of Prabhupada's formula for advancing in Krishna consciousness is this practical service, to throw yourself into it, heart and soul. So it basically I asked Krishna to engage me in service, and then when I got out in the field of book distribution, boom, you know, this whole explosion of ecstasy and just amazing results compared with what I was used to. So, you know, this comes to that, you know, the sarvopati vinir muktam. You know, that's the big part of our process, that we don't become desireless in the sense that, but we transform the desire. We become very ambitious to spread Krishna consciousness, to serve the Lord, to serve the parampara. The ambition that we had over here when we were illusioned to think we were the center of the universe, we transfer to the ambition to serve the Supreme Lord and give Him pleasure. In the 6th paragraph of the introduction, Prabhupada cites a verse from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. He says, the author of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Srila Rupa Goswami, very humbly submits that he's just trying to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. Seems almost inherently contradictory. He very humbly submits that he's just trying to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, even though he doesn't feel himself qualified to do this. And Prabhupada says that this should be the mood of all preachers within ISKCON. They should see themselves as unqualified, but should be instrumental to fulfill the desires of the previous acharyas and of the Supreme Lord. See themselves as instrumental. So to become an instrument of the Lord requires the purity that comes from vigorously trying to chant without offense. So that requires that intensity of a baby crying for its mother. That kind of intensity actually allows us to be attentive. Please, Krishna, I've suffered so much in this world. Now let me come to you. I've suffered in ignorance. I've suffered with these material desires. I've committed so many sins. Now let me come to you. Engage me in your service with full intensity. And that was an all-pervasive mood in ISKCON in the late 70s and early 80s. Just so intense, the service the devotees would render. And we get so purified by it. It came sometimes just maybe too passionate, but at least the japa, you know, this was what was stressed. And so that's the fundamental basis of our advancement in Krishna consciousness, this adarad, this careful and attentive performance of the bhakti process. So I'll stop here, and because I've got one more verse to cover in 5 minutes, and I'll just read this translation again, and then maybe there's questions or comments. Oh, my Lord, because of lusty desires from the very beginning of one's birth, the functions of one's senses, mind, life, body, religion, patience, intelligence, shyness, opulence, strength, memory, and truthfulness are vanquished. Any questions or comments? Then I'll go ahead and I'll have a question. Do we have a microphone?
Thank you for your class. I want to ask you that if a devotee is not able to complete his devotional service in this life, and if he takes birth again, will this desire, lusty desire, again be there from the very beginning of the life?
Well, the Nihavikramanasho Sti Pratyavayo Navijate. You know, the devotional service continues, you know, to the degree that we're like Prahlad Maharaj, you know, right, he was right from the very beginning, he was Nitya Siddha. So if we don't, to whatever degree we complete in Krishna consciousness in this lifetime, then we'll get a situation in the future that's similar in terms of our proclivity towards bhakti, and then whatever contaminations are still there that haven't been cleared in this lifetime, we have to deal with them. There's not any real test that we can skip, you know, in our progress in Krishna consciousness. One time, there was I don't remember the verse, but I remember the kind of the import of the class. And it was given by Ravindra Sarup on Christmas Day. It was at the tail end of a Christmas marathon in Philadelphia Temple. It's probably 1984 or something like that. And he was describing, you know, the devotional process of how Krishna will test us. And sometimes we may even back down from the test. And that not surrender to Krishna. We may opt for Maya. And then what happens when we do that, and I don't remember all the references, but I found it to be true. It was prophetic in my own devotional career. And I'll tell you a little anecdote about that. But he said that what happens, it's like a it kind of like calcifies that back down and surrender and creates a weaker fabric within our devotional service. But then if we've done that, then what we should do is we should pray to Krishna to again put us in the same situation so that we can pass the test and we don't have to take another birth, right? So what had happened to me, and this is actually, I had backed down in a big way from surrender. I was working, I was moved to the Philadelphia temple in 1981. I won't go into the details of why. I'd been in New York, very blissfully engaged, and I was moved there, and I was asked to be the Sankirtan leader in the Philadelphia temple. And I was working under a temple president that had some anartas. You know, I was getting purified by those anartas, but somehow I didn't appreciate the purification that he was bestowing upon me. And I became very disturbed, you know, by his dealings. And my mind went on strike. And I pushed the GBC, who happened to be my spiritual master, and also the temple president and regional secretary, that I didn't want to serve in his temple anymore under this man, under this devotee. And no matter how they preached to me, I just wouldn't surrender. I just couldn't do it. My mind was just too disturbed by his dealings with me. So they put me on as a Sankirtan leader in the Potomac Temple. They did pretty well. You know, actually, we started beating Philadelphia Temple in Sankirtan. It was a very competitive mood in those days in Sankirtan. I heard that there was some discussion when Radha Swami was here about how we should do 1 lakh of Maha Big Books or something, and if we should pray to Krishna for that. And then he said, yes, but you should also pray that all the other temples beat us. Right? So in other words, a tremendous Sankirtan explosion. But in those days, it was very, you know, very intense competition between temples. So we started beating them. But then, and it was actually at the end of that Christmas marathon that I was praying, and Ravindra Swarup gave this class. So I realized that I had done that, and I was a little afraid of what that would mean, you know, that I had backed down in such a major way. So I prayed that I again be put in a situation similar to that, where I could pass this test and move ahead with my Krishna conscious advancement. And lo and behold, he became the temple president. This former Sankirtan leader became the temple president in Potomac. You know, so I was back to square one again. And, you know, a similar kind of, you know, abrasive dealings. But, you know, I was determined this time I was going to pass the test. And I did, you know. I mean, I stuck with it, and I won't go into all the details. I mean, he got purified too. He actually had very serious spiritual problems that came out, you know. And he left the movement for a while and came back purified. And so that's the issue, you know. We're going to be faced with many, many challenges as we move from here to there. No question about it. It's going to be there, and it's like Krishna knows where our spiritual Achilles heel is, you know, where our attachments are. So out of kindness to us, so that we can resume in a complete way our loving relationship with him and experience this level of happiness that is a trillion fold more than that of Brahmanda, you know, even a fraction of that trillionfold doesn't compare to the ocean of transcendental bliss. He wants us to come there. So he'll take shots, boom, you know, at our Achilles heel, and we'll be struggling. Oh, you know, the most intense. Expect it. It's a given. It's got to happen in this lifetime. We're going to be tested. So one should prepare for that by vigorously chanting his rounds, by studying Prabhupada's books, so that when the tests come, and my experience is that the severity of the test increases as we go along the Bhakti Marg. You know, so we have to equip ourselves with the astras of the holy name, of philosophical understanding, of proper dealings with the Vaishnavas, so that when we're tested, we got friends we can take shelter of. We haven't offended them all. You know, the Kanishtha, he thinks he's the best devotee. And everybody else, what's wrong with these people? Don't they understand who I am? You know, I mean, this is the, just a little couple inches this way going towards here, you know, that kind of mentality. So, that ability to take shelter of the devotees, to reveal one's mind in confidence, to inquire confidentially, actually, that saves us when we're in the major tests. If we can just be humble enough to admit, hey, Maya's got me in a vice, and she's squeezing my head, and it's, I don't know what to do. I'm lost. If we can take shelter at that time, then we can pass the test. But be prepared, the devotee's going to cut. He's going to tell you you're nonsense. You need to, get up early and chant your rounds, heart and soul. Stop playing with Maya. So, yeah, there's going to be some material desires if we got them left over, if we didn't finish our business. But Prabhupada, here's the key. There were many times when several occasions when Prabhupada was asked, Prabhupada, if we're not completely pure at the time we leave our body, what will happen? The same question was asked. So, and maybe slightly different nuances. So then Prabhupada's response, if you've dedicated your life for pushing on this Krishna consciousness movement, then even though you're not completely perfect, at the end of your life, Lord Chaitanya will personally come and take you back to Godhead. Now, I witnessed this with one of my closest friends, Nirguna Prabhu, left his body a little over a year ago in our classroom at the Mayapur Institute. He'd spent the last 4 months of his life there. And I'd never witnessed this before, a person in the active dying process, and how Krishna just severs, the attachment one after another. His former wife came to visit him. He brought her back into Krishna consciousness in 5 days. I mean, the power of someone on their deathbed, and the potency. But he came to an extremely high level. I mean, at least from my perception and from the senior devotees that were at his bedside at the time he departed, Harisari Prabhu, Pankajangri, Janani Vas, it was very clear that he went to the spiritual world. Even though the cancer killed him very quickly. It was just from the time of discovery to the time of death, discovered that he had this huge tumor in his chest was 6 months. But the acceleration of his detachment and his spiritual realization were just incredible. I mean, I'll tell you a quick story. I know everyone's working against the clock to get as many books out, but maybe this will inspire you. He actually, Dr. Avnish, from the Bhaktivedanta Hospital, he came, spent the last month of Nirguna's life there to help out because it was like we had an intensive care unit. It was... his needs were so great. But on the evening of the appearance of Radhakund, I was on the telephone, and he was getting close to the end. We had a few days to a week. This is what Avnish was telling us. So I had just gotten off the phone with Jayapataka Swami. Nirguna had served as a temple president in Jayapataka Swami's zone, and he'd married Jayapataka Swami's disciples. So they had a relationship. And I was on the phone with them, and I was setting up a call, so that Jayapataka Swami could speak with Nirguna. So it's about 9:15 at night, and I went down and I said, Nirguna, I just spoke with Jayapataka Swami, and Nirguna pushed me out of the way, like I was, like a mosquito bothering him or something. And at that time, we had 24/7 massage of his feet and legs going on. because he was in excruciating pain. A month before he left, the cancer ate through into his spinal cord, and so he became paralyzed from the solar plexus down. But with that paralysis also came excruciating pain. And the only thing that we found that would relieve that pain is if he got intense massage of his feet and legs. So we had over 25 devotees lined up 24/7 massage. Even when he was sleeping, if he wasn't massaged, he'd wake up in even more pain. So that's what we did for him. So Grahila Prabhu was massaging his feet at that time. And I went up to Grahila. He's a Prabhupada disciple. He was an old indexer with the BBT. I said, Grahila, what's going on with Nirguna? And Grahila said, I don't know, but I think he's about to leave his body. So I went in the other room and woke up Avnish. And he said, come check out Nirguna, see what's going on. And then he corroborated that he was indeed about to leave his body. His pulse and blood pressure were practically negligible. And very shortly, he lost consciousness. And so I called everybody back. Everyone had gone home. We'd have these evening kirtans called up Hari Sari, Pankajangri, Janani Vas, Bhakti Vishnu Brahmadava Swami. And so they all came back. And we had an all-night kirtan. And after Mangal Arti, the next day, I made an announcement. I'd been getting constant coaching from Radhana Swami on how to deal with this whole thing, because nobody really knew. We called Chopati, you know, when it really started getting bad, like about a month before, and asked if some of the brahmacharis could come to help. And the answer came back, no. And then I found out later that Radhana Swami didn't want anybody to come, because he wanted the devotees there to go into it. He felt it would pull the community together, which it did. It was like a phenomenal event. So anyway, I made this announcement, and Radhana Swami said, he'll still be able to hear it even if he's unconscious. So I made this point to the devotees, invited everybody to come. And so we had about 80 devotees crammed into a 16-by-20-foot classroom. This is where we have the Bhakti Shastri course going right now. And, powerful kirtan going on. Kurma, the cook, great kirtan leader. I know he's a good cook, but I never knew he was such a good kirtan leader. He went on for 7 hours. And I was sitting, Bhakti Vishwambha Madhava Swami was sitting right by Nirguna's head. I was sitting right next to him. Hari Sari was sitting over here. Pankajangri and Janani Vas were over on the other side of the bed. And Bhakti Vishwambha Madhava Swami, he scared me. You know how Maharaj is kind of like one of the four Kumaras? He's like just ever youthful and always enthusiastic and kind of thinks out loud. And, he just went, Jamastami, grab my leg. You know, and I thought, look, Nirguna, his tongue is moving. And I thought, sure enough, he was starting to vibrate. And then it became more and more pronounced. You know, that his tongue was, he was singing along with a kirtan. And then he opened his eyes. And then he started smiling. And then he lifted his arms up and started chanting along with a kirtan. I mean, Avnish was besides himself. He said, this is something that's completely impossible from a medical standpoint. And now, mind you, Nirguna had given his life completely to the movement. You know, he wasn't considered by many to be an advanced devotee. Everyone liked him. He was very, very hardworking, very dedicated, always out on Sankirtan. You know, just a real fireball. When everybody else was coming back from a hard day on Sankirtan and we'd stop to put petrol in the car and everybody else was tired, he'd run out and start selling books to other cars at the petrol station and sell them to the attendants, you know, pumping the gas, and to the owner of the gas station. He'd just be running around like a ball of fire. This is the kind of person just totally determined to serve Prabhupada's mission. And I immediately called up Radhana Swami, and this is just before the Mayapur Yatra last Kartik, right? So Radhana Swami started preaching to him, and it went on for 40 minutes. He was singing bhajans to him and chanting his japa. And Nirguna was just listening. Sometimes, you know, with a mobile phone, you lose a connection. So I just picked it up, and because Nirguna was so weak, you know, he's just sitting there with his closed eyes, but he had this really peaceful grin on his face. And so then Radhanath sent me, Jamastami, I got to go. I'm going to miss my flight. You know, he was coming. He was coming that morning. You know, we were thinking that Nirguna would hold on, you know, until all the sannyasis from the and all the devotees from the yatra would come, but Krishna had another plan. So there was another, I'll just make one short point, and maybe the person who's giving class tomorrow can cover text 9. But in the first photograph, that, or the first picture that Nirguna saw of Krishna was of Giriraj, of Krishna lifting Govardhan. And so he had a special rasa with Govardhan Hill and with Krishna this pastime. So, and that came out, you know, in the care that he went through in those 4 months. And so there was a Mataji Prabhupada disciple who was heading up a lot of the care. Had this Govardhan Srila that she kept near Nirguna's bed. And towards the last days, Nirguna actually had it in his hand right on his chest. And it was on his chest. They put flowers on it. It was like the altar, you know, and he'd be looking right here, you know, at Giriraj. And so, and somehow or other, Nirguna had this, Krishna came to him in a vision or something, and he said to the devotees, you know, I got to get an invitation. I haven't received my invitation. So somehow it came out in the discussions with Hari Sari and other devotees that he was waiting for an invitation to resume and to go back to the spiritual world. And, you know, from time to time, Hari Sari had to ask him, because in those, you know, towards the end, you know, he was down to like maybe 20 kgs. And he was already small, but he was, you know, his esophagus was constricted, so he couldn't really eat solid food. So he was on liquids for the last month. And even that, he couldn't swallow the liquids at the end, you know. Once in a while, I'd take a sip here and there. So he was just like, you know, his thigh was smaller than my wrist, you know, at the end. So you'd have to put your ear right on his mouth just to hear, like, just a whisper. So he wasn't getting the invitation. And then, you know, when he came to consciousness on that last day, he said, get the peace and go. He said it in a loud voice. And Hari Sari said to him, what? Get the peace and go. So Hari Sari said, well, did someone say something to you? And they're going to say yes. And he had a big smile on his face. Who said something to you? Nirguna, sorry. Giriraj. And then he said, did you get your invitation? Hari Sari asked him, did you get your invitation? Nirguna said, yes. So then, 40 minutes with Radhana Swami, and then maybe about a half an hour later, and then he lost consciousness again. So he regained consciousness. It was probably around 7:15, and he lost consciousness. And the kirtan was just powerful. I mean, just amazing, the intensity of the atmosphere, just full of transcendental bliss. And then at 1:22, he breathed his last breath. And so the devotees were hurriedly cleaning him, you know, and changing his cloth. And then I was asked to offer artik, you know, to his body. And then, but when they were bathing him and dressing him, they couldn't find the Govardhan Srila. It just was nowhere to be found. It just bewildered everybody. Where is the Giriraj? So devotees were thinking, well, you know, Giriraj said, get the peace and let's go. You know, so, but it was clear in everyone's mind that Nirguna had gone to the spiritual world. It was just such a powerful departure. So that's what we really need to do, to avoid, we've got to eliminate the fruit of desires. Fruit of desire means another birth. That's what it means. Fruit of activities means other birth, other birth. So we give our lives to Prabhupada's mission. We try our best to function on the Uttama Bhakti platform. And it's anyabhilasita. Now, abhilas means desire. Abhilasita. That goes a little further. It means the very nature, the motivation of a devotee. If he's primarily motivated to surrender to Krishna according to the definition of Uttama Bhakti given by Rupa Goswami, and sometimes there may be some fleeting or superficial desire, or maybe he's in a life-threatening situation, he cries out, Krishna, save me. He's still within Uttama Bhakti. There's a whole discussion like that. So we should try our best to function on the Uttama Bhakti platform. It's not, even on the Kanishta platform, Kanishta Adhikari can be functioning as an Uttama Bhakti platform. That should be, we should function like that. If we do that, even though there may be some small contamination, the main thrust, our nature, our devotional nature, is on the Uttama Bhakti platform. And then Lord Chaitanya will take us back. But we have to really work hard, really try hard. I'm sorry, I've gone over time. I just was inspired by the question to glorify my near and dear friend Nirguna Prabhu. So I hope that shed some light, on the issue. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.